welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have with me Dr. Rhett Bergeron. Dr. Bergeron is a holistic physician here in Atlanta, specifically, up and coming now, and north of Atlanta. And he and I have worked together for years. Dr. Bergeron helped me establish Avatar Cancer Center back in 1999. Or thereabouts, and we worked together for several years, and we continue to work together, even though our offices are not in the same location. To this day, we have explored many different modalities in the treatment of cancer, and of course, share a love of holistic medicine, and I'm pleased to have him on today. Hello, Dr. Bergeron. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Dr. Kolb, and it is a pleasure and a privilege to be with you, and I look forward to, this discussion and anything we can do to encourage our audience.
Yeah, I had, two or three weeks ago, Dr. Gonzalez on, and, we've interviewed many, many people with cancer therapies around the world, Hilda Clark, just a whole bunch of different doctors. But I think that nobody has your background of having, gone to so many cancer clinics outside the U.S., studied with so many different people. You want to tell the listening audience a little bit about how you got, pointed toward treating cancer. You told me one time it was the thing you definitely didn't want to do is treat cancer. I thought that was interesting, because then you kind of got railroaded into it in an interesting way.
You are correct. I never set out to really treat cancer or to be an oncologist. But early in my training and through my residency, when I was looking outside of conventional medicine for answers, I became very intrigued with the problem of cancer, and began to interact with different cancer patients. And as I went around this country, I started to interact and discuss the subject with different complementary, comprehensive, integrated physicians. And so I had an early exposure to it. And you and I know a lot of physicians who are tackling the problem and thinking about it comprehensively, aggressively. And then right after I finished my residency, which was in the LSU Medical Charity Hospital System, I had the opportunity to work with a immunology lab that was studying cancer and chronic fatigue. And we were making cancer vaccines from tumor samples of patients and using low-dose hormones such as interleukin-2 to support the immune system and direct it towards, addressing their cancers. And we had some early responses that were very encouraging. And so I did that a couple of years, and the company relocated to Atlanta, and I transferred with them. And that was sort of the start of, my direct work and research with cancer.
I know when we had our cancer clinic here, we would inject cytokines. That was interesting. That was from Germany. That cytokines, what I would tell people is in my silicone patients, they had too many cytokines because the silicone got eaten up by the macrophage and broke it open and released tumor necrosis factor and interleukin-2. So my cancer patient, my silicone patients had too much cytokines and were in pain all the time. They had like a massive inflammatory reaction going on. But the cancer patients didn't have enough cytokines, evidently, and needed to inject the cytokines to kill the cancer off. So it did represent both sides of the spectrum.
Yes, and that's an interesting comment about cytokines or immune hormones. And there are various ways to take that approach. And some people have used plant extracts such as aloe vera and beta-glucan, and there are in misoto, or known as Iscador, in European medicine. And then, of course, there are other ways where you can directly take cytokines that are manufactured in the lab by a pharmaceutical company, or even, you know, there are techniques now where you can harvest white blood cells from a patient and you can induce them in the lab to produce cytokines in a very balanced array, and then that's given back to the patient. And a patient that's properly prepared for immunotherapy, you know, they're nutritionally supported, they're detoxified, and they've hopefully minimized the exposure to toxic therapies such as chemo or radiation. And even if they've had, you know, tumor debulking surgically, some of these patients can have tremendous results. And I've seen that in various cancer institutions around the world, and alternative clinics have also seen fairly good responses. So it's an exciting field. And one of the problems in it, though, is that often in conventional medicine, you know, if you go to a big cancer center like MD Anderson Cancer Center, it's immunotherapy is done in every major cancer center in the world, but it's often relegated to the basement and to a very small part of the overall, you know, program. And so patients don't find out about it to the very end after they failed every other treatment. And then their bodies are just not in good shape to respond. So one of the things that I've enjoyed is that patients who are looking outside of conventional medicine have often become informed, and they'll ask about these therapies and approaches earlier in the course of their disease, and there's a much better, you know, opportunity to respond. So it's exciting. It's biological. It's natural. And actually, Susan, there's a group of gynecological oncologists here in Atlanta, and 10 years ago, they were telling some of their ovarian cancer patients that, you know, in the future, chemotherapy for, you know, more advanced ovarian cancer is going to be considered barbaric, and that immunotherapy is going to be, you know, one of the primary approaches.
Yeah, and one of the things that you mentioned before, you know, we do a lot of cancer surgery here, and but we do it a little differently. We do it not just to stage the cancer, but we do it to debulk, because our patients are choosing not to have chemotherapy or radiation. They often will have surgery because it's well known that debulking the tumor and removing the main tumor, especially in breast cancer and sometimes in skin cancer, will cause the remaining tumors that are outside the area to regress. And it's a very interesting a phenomenon, I think. It's just very interesting that somehow they might be connected to the main tumor in a way that is necessary for their survival.
You know, the way I explain that to patients is a tumor is a local area of toxicity, and the metabolic toxins that it's producing will press, you know, the metabolism, the immune system, and often the primary tumor will secrete types of proteins that block the immune system, and therefore allow the primary site and metastatic sites, lymph nodes, to grow. So that's a good point about that primary, you know, surgical approach to tumors. And of course, one of the things we try to encourage people, and I know you do also, is to prepare for surgery so that, you know, there's minimal possibility of isolated tumor cells spreading. And and so that's one of the things we try to also encourage patients to do.
I don't know if you know this, Rhett, but do you know that we rinse out the area with water when we're doing tumor surgery? Because water will wipe cancer cells.
I was not aware of that. Please enlighten
me. We rinse with the normal antibacterial solution that we always use, but then at the end we rinse with we rinse with water because it'll lyse the cancer cells, and so we do special things to get around to have margins. We don't like to cut through cancers or into cancers or even into lymphatics. If the cancer is felt to be in the lymphatics, we'll try to take the lymphatics up and then whatever abnormal lymph nodes there are, not really doing a axillary dissection like they do in regular cancer treatment, because we don't want to take out the normal lymph nodes. We just want to take out any abnormal tissue. It's a little different thinking. You're not, you know, you're not going for everything, because you probably can't get around everything anyway. I mean, there's a lot of information out there that once you get beyond a certain point, once you get disease up in the axilla from a breast cancer, it's already systemic. It's already out in the bloodstream. So you're not really going to get around it anyway.
Well, listen, on that note about breast cancer and surgery and lymph node removal, you know, often I'm curious about your opinion and advice, because I often encourage patients, depending on the case, you know, if it's a very small, you know, less than, you know, a centimeter and a half, and very isolated, and depending on their mammogram, I would sometimes tell them do not look at the lymph nodes. But if it's slightly larger, you know, 2 to 4 centimeters or 5, patients often ask about, you know, what about my lymph nodes? And I'll often mention to them that somewhere between, you know, 3 and 4 and 5 lymph nodes is a reasonable amount of lymph nodes to look at, because we want to avoid disrupting, and you know, the whole lymphatic
system. Right, the lymphatic growth,
you know, 8,
exactly.
10, 15. So what's your perspective on that?
Well, what I usually do, I'm usually doing either a lumpectomy or, a partial mastectomy. I've had a lot of tumors lately in the upper part of the breast, and there's actually no reason to do a full mastectomy on them, because the lymphatic drainage it's going up, not down. So I usually do a partial mastectomy on them, but if the tumor's in the lower part of the breast, I'll do a full mastectomy, because what you're trying to do is take all the lymphatics out toward the, you know, toward the axilla, unless the tumor is medial. If the tumor is medial, of course, it drains into the chest, so it's a little more difficult to get those. We usually don't. But just going up, we remove lymph nodes almost every day we operate here at Plastikos, because they're full of silicone. So what I've been doing is just removing the abnormal lymph nodes. You can inject dye or radioactivity to get your sentinel nodes, and that's certainly worthwhile doing if there's nothing to feel in the axilla. But what I sort of feel is that you just remove what's abnormal, because cancer causes a very distinctive feel in a lymph node. And, you know, you want to remove all gross tumor. If there's nothing to feel in the axilla, and you can make your incision and feel the axilla pretty easily, then taking the sentinel node is probably the best thing to do, because you could have microscopic disease in that node. But really, for alternative cancer care, microscopic disease is going to be treated. You don't really need to cut it out. You see what I mean? There's no reason to. Whereas with regular chemotherapy and radiation-based treatments, it depends on whether or not you've got microscopic disease, which chemotherapy regimes are going to use sometimes. So, you know, the information you're trying to get is different. If the patient's going with alternative care, or holistic care, I tell them just to remove all gross disease, you know, any disease we can feel. And that I think, is the most important thing. And I really don't think it's worthwhile doing sentinel nodes, you know, if they're not abnormal.
Well, that's a very, very good point that you made, and to sort of collaborate with that. You know, I'm not sure if you're familiar, but in the mid-90s, there was, as I recall, I believe, 2 studies published where at the time of initial surgical treatment of breast cancers, they also did bone marrow biopsies. And what was interesting was that if it was a slightly larger tumor, or if there were lymph nodes already positive, then there was about a 65% chance of the bone marrow already staining positive for micrometastatic disease.
Right.
So it goes along.
I mean, that's what I believe. There's no reason to clean out the axilla and give somebody lymphedema. If you can't get around that disease, you know, you can only debulk it.
And so I think based on our experience, and when I saw those studies, that was relatively early. You know, I was just starting to work in this field, but it really shocked me, and it gave me, you know, really for the first time, very clear proof that so much of cancer is a systemic and microscopic disease. And so, therefore, you know, long-term therapy, particularly with the immune system, it's even more fundamental than nutritional and herbal therapy in a certain sense. But so immunotherapy has been a great interest of mine. And one of the things that I've used a good bit with post-operative, you know, for breast cancer patients is mistletoe injections. A lot of patients feel sort of empowered because it's a nice, simple therapy that you do at home. If you look at the studies long-term on mistletoe, they're generally fairly positive. And the recurrence rate
right.
long-term...
Suzanne Summers popularized that, yeah. One thing I wanted to mention, and I'm sure you're aware of, but I think the public isn't aware of, there were studies done showing that if you stick a... I don't believe in sticking needles in cancers or things that might be cancers. And let me tell you why. The majority of cancers form in areas of fibrocystic disease, because fibrocystic disease, I believe, forms around toxic areas, especially upper outer quadrants. And the upper outer quadrant is where dioxin and other chemicals tend to settle out in the breast because they are hydrophobic in many cases, and like the benzenes and toluenes and those kind of enes often are carcinogenic and settle in the upper outer quadrant. So fibrocystic disease is usually in the upper outer quadrant. Some fibrocystic disease progresses on to premalignant fibrocystic disease and then on into cancer. So what you've got is people sticking needles into areas of fibrocystic disease. Well, fibrocystic disease bleeds like crazy. It's basically scar tissue with cysts in it. So it'll bleed like crazy. Well, you know what? If there's a cancer in there, you just spread it to the whole breast because it bruises everywhere. And they did a study showing that if you stick needles into cancers to diagnose them, they have much higher rate of lymph node being positive. And what you just got done saying is that once the lymph nodes are positive, it's not just the lymph nodes. You spread it to the whole body. So a lot of people now want to stick needles into cancers to diagnose them. And what I do, if I'm pretty sure it's a cancer, I'll take a pretty large margin, like a centimeter around it, and then I basically have done a lumpectomy. And so they might not need anything else if the margins are clear.
So you're saying instead of a needle biopsy, a lumpectomy for the area?
Yeah, if you're pretty sure it's a cancer, and, you know, after 30 years of doing surgery on cancers, I actually got pretty good at saying whether or not something was cancer. I'm also pretty good at saying whether or not something's premalignant. So, you know, I mean, you know I use methods other than their normal methods, so, and they're pretty accurate. So, you know, if I know something's going to be cancer, I don't get close to it when I take it out. You know, I take it out with a good margin of tissue. I mean, given that I can. Sometimes it does go up to the skin. But given that it's in the middle of the breast, you can get an area all the way around it so that you're good. And then, you know, a lot of the patients that come to me don't really want to do chemo and radiation. You know, they want to do other things, the things you do and the things, you know, that are done at other, you know, holistic cancer clinics. So, you know,
let me mention to you in the audience a very interesting test for cancer that has just become available last year. Your audience probably has not heard of a test called OncoBlot. And the information's at oncoblot.com. But it came out of research from Purdue University, and it measures a very small protein that generally only cancer cells produce. And this lab is able to detect, you know, cancer that's the size of the head of an eight pin, and it can tell you where it is. And so it's a very interesting test that, especially after you've done a lumpectomy and you've done, you know, 6 months to maybe a year of nutritional, metabolic, immune therapy, and you're not sure where you are. This is an incredible test to help guide patients and physicians, and so you're not always, you know, worrying about, you know, where you are. And so
that
it's a great
good.
Tool.
And you do it, and you do it before, too, so you have a baseline before the surgery and the therapy, right?
It depends. It's a good point. You could do it before to confirm a cancer diagnosis. Well said. On the other hand, so many patients come to you and I with a confirmed diagnosis of cancer that because it's a fairly, you know, it's a fairly expensive test. And so for some patients, if you already know you have cancer, it may not be worth the additional information. But it's a great screening tool for someone who is at risk for cancer. Oncoblot.com is just a incredible test that I've just started using this year, and I think they're seeking FDA and Medicare approval sometime soon.
And insurance would pay for it. That'd be good. Or maybe insurance would pay for it. We don't know the way insurance is going these days.
Well, of course, as usual, when Medicare ends up approving something, usually insurance companies follow suit. And
that's true.
And it's an excellent test, and I encourage your audience to look at it and to consider using it.
Well, why don't we take a few minutes and talk about what, and it actually is the same thing. If you're trying to prevent cancer or if you have cancer, what are the really important things that you would do in a nutritional and holistic program to help a patient that was either at high risk for cancer or just already had the diagnosis but didn't really want to go chemotherapy and radiation route?
Well, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I was fascinated and interested in nutrition and detoxification, and I still am. But 15, 20 years later, what I'm most interested in is the heart and the mind of a patient and the stress that they're under and the stress that very likely, you know, was a contributing factor to their cancer. And so the very first thing I do, and just like you and many other holistic, you know, physicians, is you interview the patient and you try to have them see where their stress level is, and are there certain situations or conflicts or persons that, really affected them and brought their immune system down and probably pushed them over and caused that cancer. So that's the very first thing that I now start with. And even though it may take, you know, a whole hour to interview a patient and may even take a few visits to really get to know them, that's always on the, you know, the forefront of my mind. But secondly, nutrition is just always the first, the first step. And I simply try to have patients get off of sugar. If I had to just say one thing, you know, no processed white sugar, but of course processed foods, you know, need to be eliminated, and they need to, of course, you know, develop a diet of whole foods, living foods, and adding green, fresh juices into the diet, and alkalinizing their system. And of course, all those foods are full of enzymes, and I know Dr. Gonzalez talked about that, so it's very important to sort of measure where the patient's going, and we try to measure their urine pHs some and get a sense of how acidic they are. The third thing we do is, you know, we focus on detoxification. You mentioned the pharmacistic areas that are just, you know, deposits of chemicals and heavy metals in many places in the body are. So I remember Sherry Rogers' book, Detoxify or Die. And so that's really, there's no choice. You know, a patient has to detoxify and clean up their cellular organ tissue and enhance their metabolism and immune system if they're going to win. So that's the third component. And then the fourth component is just to develop a comprehensive, patient-specific treatment plan that looks at, you know, a host of different ways to affect our genes and our immune system, our liver and kidneys, and that kind of thing. So that's generally the approach that I take, and it's always unique for each patient. You know, the patients that I have been helpful with and have had great outcomes, mm-hmm. none of them have ever had the same identical approach. It's always been tailored mm-hmm. to each patient, and so that's generally how I approach things.
What I tell patients is that cancer, in my opinion anyway, is organ-based, where the organ loses energy, significant loss of energy. And the organ can be like the blood, you know, in case of leukemia, the, you know, bone marrow, the, you know, the liver, the breast, the kidney, whatever. But certain things are true. There's certain physical carcinogens that can concentrate in the organ. There's certain radiation, like if you get exposed to radiation at Chernobyl, the first thing you got to worry about is your thyroid. That's why you take large doses of iodine if you ever get radiation exposure to drive out the radioactive iodine. But, you know, there's carcinogens, there's radiation, there's all of these physical things that there's no doubt can cause cancer. But in a lot of people, and then there's radiation exposure, like people that were exposed to the environment where the first above-ground nuclear things were done, that really caused problems with cancer, as did the, I think you remember the Long Island study where they found that breast cancer was nestled at the end of the cul-de-sac because of lead in the water pipes. You know, so there's things like lead that can lead to higher rates of cancer. Arsenic can. So all of these things are physical things that can lead to cancer. But what I tell people is, for breast cancer anyway, the majority of breast cancer that I see has a single initiating cause, and it's usually something called a biological conflict that was, you know, first introduced by Dr. Hammer in Germany, German New Medicine, and being, I guess, what you would call clairvoyant or whatever you want to say, but I can walk in a room and within a few minutes of talking with the patient, I'm pretty familiar with what that biological conflict was. You know, loss of a child, a husband cheating on them, you know, an uncle sexually molesting them. These are things that I pick up on, and or the patient tells me right out, but I will tell them that, you know, there is often, not always, but often a particular cause causing what we would call a stress reaction, which can be identified because the patient loses their appetite, their hands get cold, or their feet get cold, or extremities get cold, and they end up in a state of shock for a few days. And they usually remember that. And then that is what I believe allows things to come in from other dimensions that are involved in cancer. And I think you and I had a little conversation about that the other day, that I think there is... We not only have to look at the cellular level for cancer, but we also need to look at a multidimensional level. Because like I said on an interview the other day I was on, I think, the X Zone, I said, until we can explain spontaneous remission and generational curses, we will not understand cancer. We won't.
That's a good point. Yeah, Hammer's his phrase was the biological conflict. Of course, that's on a sort of a physical organism level, but you and I, you know, we look at it from a spiritual, emotional, almost interpersonal, you know, level. And so the people in the events of our life and spiritually and emotionally have a huge impact on our health. And, you know, it's hard in our modern thinking of Western medicine and tests and x-rays and blood tests, mm-hmm. you can't, it's hard to measure emotional, spiritual things. They have to be emotionally and spiritually discerned, and our culture mm-hmm. is not very acclimated to that for the most part. And so that's a big part of what I try to do. And in fact, Susan, as I interact with different clinics, and in fact, I was just in Los Angeles a week ago at a conference, and a lot of well-known integrated physicians from around the country were there. And it's interesting, the approaches of quantum physics and the psychosocial, emotional, spiritual parts of health were two of the things that were most emphasized in mm-hmm. dealing with chronic chronic health and disease.
Well, this interview we're doing kind of impromptu was because Dr. Amit Goswami couldn't do the interview that was scheduled. And you probably know Dr. Goswami is the quantum physicist in What the Bleep Do We Know? And I've interviewed him probably 8 times over the last 10 years. And our discussion almost always centers around the explaining spontaneous remission via quantum physics, okay? He actually can do it. I mean, that was why I was so interested in interviewing the different physicists for quantum theory and for superstring theory, because if you understand multidimensional reality, which only, in my book, only superstring and quantum actually go there, you can explain spontaneous remission. And spontaneous remission of cancer is the most commonly described spontaneous remission that there is. You know, that's been described again and again. People have metastatic cancer. They have an energy that at the top of their head that goes through to the bottom of their feet, and by the time that energy gets through their body, which only takes a minute or two, they don't have any more cancer. It's gone. So, like I said, you've got to be able to explain that if you want to understand cancer, and you cannot explain that if you limit your discussion to the third dimension only.
Well, spontaneous remission is a fascinating and complex, in a certain sense, subject. And now, look at it from a different viewpoint, or maybe just not a viewpoint, but as I have spoken, and you probably have too, interview patients that have had remissions, it's in fact, and also patients that I've worked with over the years, the people that have had the best success, lived the longest, had the greatest quarter of life, and have had remissions, have been patients who were very healthy in their mind and heart, and in their relationships, and they sought to heal their relationships. And repair things in life and reprioritize what they were living for and what they valued. And so I have often found that to be true. And in fact, I remember, Susan, at your office, I met a young woman 10 years ago, and she had a friend with her, a man, and we talked an hour. And at the very end of the hour about, alternative treatment, I said one last thing to her. I said, by the way, I need to tell you one last thing. And I said, I have found that when patients have emotional disturbances, I'm going to put this on hold in a second.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong. It was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plastico's were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plastico's and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plastico's did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plastico's is a bargain.
Plastico's, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available, 770-457-4677. Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.
Well, Rhett, before we got cut off, you were telling me about a patient that you met at our clinic here.
Yes, and what I wanted to say was that at the very end of our interview, I said to her, I said, there's one more thing I need to tell you. And I said, I have found that when patients have some emotional trauma in their life, some ongoing conflict, something disturbing, you know, their spiritual and emotional well-being, I said, often they cannot get well. And so I asked her to think about that, and you know, we would meet again and talk. Well, she came back a month later, and she brought a different guest with her, a different man. And she said, Dr. Bergeron, I want to introduce you to my husband. I said, the first guest that accompanied was really someone I shouldn't be with, and so it was just interesting how, you know, asking a patient to think about their emotional and spiritual health, and she knew that she wasn't, you know, doing the right thing in that relationship.
Right.
And so it helped to reconcile she and her husband, and it contributed greatly to her, to her future health.
Right. I have a story that happened about the same time frame. I was treating a gentleman with metastatic kidney cancer, and he had retired at age 40. He was a multimillionaire, okay? He was going to enjoy life, and instead he came down with this horrible metastatic renal cancer. Renal cancer, by the way, is often due to relationship problems. Whenever my mom and dad fought, my mom would get a kidney infection, you know, infection being conflict not properly resolved in the mental and emotional plane that manifests in the physical. But in any case, this gentleman was coming in for healings, and he was pretty end stage. He had a lot of, you know, fluid in his abdomen, and the healings were, you know, helpful to him. But one day I said to him, "Who's Amy?" And he jumps out of the chair and he goes, "You hired a detective." I said, "I did not hire a detective." I said, "Who the hell is Amy?" Well, Amy was the one woman that he loved in his life. And he had cheated on her. And he said that it just really shocked him when I said out of the blue, "Who's Amy?" And then he came and brought her the next time. He actually called her up, told her this, and Amy came to take care of him. And he, of course, really was apologetic for breaking up their relationship. And, you know, she had been the one person he really loved, and he had even been unfaithful to her. So she was with him. He didn't live all that much longer. But he said to me, no matter what, even if it doesn't matter if I live or die, the fact that I'm now, you know, with Amy and we are together at this time is due to you, and that is, I'll always be grateful for you saying that. And it was interesting because, you know, I didn't know who Amy was. So, this is the kind of information that can come through with healings that can be very, very significant to cancer patients.
Well, you know,
and I think you're right.
Well, you know, that story, yes, and that story that you just told is so important to illustrate the point about what is success in treating cancer. And it's not always a remission or a physical cure.
Right.
You know, there's so many aspects of a person's life and their relationships that are often involved and that can be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And as you just said, you know, often when a patient's, you know, when certain relationships are restored, that's the most important thing. In fact, we just, one of the patients I worked with over the last year, she just passed away last week with a pancreatic cancer. And it's interesting, when she and her husband split up 15 years ago, they had two sons. And since that split up, the sons had never spoken to each other. And one son went with the father and one son went with the mother. And through this whole course of treatment, they all got back together. And that, and on the day that she passed away, the ex-husband and both of the sons were in the room. And so that was, we thought that was going to be one of the most important things about her, you know, her health and the healing the family, because she had a terminal, you know, it seemingly was a terminal cancer, and she wasn't, you know, she was much older and couldn't quite do a very comprehensive, you know, aggressive cancer program. So that's a good example of what we're talking about.
Yeah, so there's a bigger dynamic, and you know what I tell people is that the most important thing that, you know, the first time we interview a cancer patient is to determine if they want to live or die. And that may sound like a stupid question, but many of my patients can tell me exactly when that they let the cancer in, they say, you know, and it was when they decided they didn't want to be here anymore. They might have had a very rough time with a bunch of stuff going wrong in life. They might have had a really bad relationship, you know, whatever it was, but they know exactly when they decided that they didn't want to be here. And that was probably exactly when the cancer started, because, you know, that they know that those emotions, those strong creative emotions of not wanting to be here, that sets it in motion. And it's not the, I mean, I'm not saying every cancer is set in motion by that. Certainly, you know, I mean, if you have chronic reflux for years, you can get esophageal cancer, probably from physical causes, you know that. I mean, but a lot of patients that come to me know exactly when it happened. They understand that they're powerful creators, and they know when they created it. But and they want help in uncreating it. So that's like forgiveness work. That's you know, a lot of releasing work. There's spiritual techniques for releasing. I'm sure you're aware of those. And they're, you know, we need to release toxic emotions and emotions that we had that we didn't mean, you know. I mean, sometimes you get really mad at somebody and then find out that you just misunderstood everything. Well, you need to get rid of those toxic emotions. You know, it's forgiveness and releasing techniques are really important to do that.
So that really highlights the fact that true cancer therapy and treatment is certainly much more than radiation, chemo, and surgery.
And that's
the message that the whole world needs to hear. And you know, what's encouraging is that more and more, you know, clinics and physicians and even major institutions are understanding this and moving slightly in that direction. I think that as more and more Americans, you know, we've lived with this epidemic of cancer for, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 years now. And the interesting thing is that each generation is starting to really see that we have lost the battle. And the interesting thing is that the younger generations, most of them are very skeptical of conventional therapy, and they're much more willing to embrace, you know, a more integrated approach. And you know, what's really fascinating, Susan, is that 15, 20 years ago, what I mostly saw was late-stage cancer patients. And now what I mostly see is early-stage cancer patients who are looking for options. Maybe they want to
go
conventional and alternative. But it's really fascinating and really enjoyable to be able to work with patients in such early stages.
That's true. I wanted to mention a couple of things that I'm thinking of just that might be important, too. And why? We mentioned earlier that there might be some higher dimensional elements or other dimensional elements to cancer. And the things that cause the breakthroughs of these, I believe, are in certain categories. One is trauma. One is hormonal changes, like you see it with, like after a pregnancy or after, you know, in puberty, where you get great changes in hormones, anywhere where you get great changes, or even with IVF, when you get great changes in hormones. So what I guess I'm saying is that hormone balance is very important to restore order to the body. And I think that we're just beginning to understand that in cancer therapy. And then the other thing is removing trauma at a cellular level, removing the effects of trauma can be very, very important. Physical trauma and emotional trauma. And let me tell you why. I had a patient that had metastatic breast cancer, and she had a met in her skull, okay? I was doing a healing on her, and I saw a soccer ball hit her. And I said, when you were 12, did you have a soccer ball hit you right where the met was? You know, she knew where it was, and we pointed it. And she said, yeah, I did. She remembered it, you know, because it hit her, and it knocked her out. So that is when I discovered that metastatic disease, the location of that, is not random. It's where there's etheric injury to the body. So think about that. You can get metastatic disease going to wherever in the body it's weak. So if you're an alcoholic, it can go to the liver. If you're a smoker, it can go to the lungs. If you've got other problems, maybe it can go to the brain. You know, we haven't figured out all the details yet, but where metastatic disease goes isn't random either. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, it is very interesting. And in fact, just to illustrate that, I've been working with a patient with a primary liver cancer, and we used a very interesting protein that affects the P53 cancer gene. And mm-hmm. primary liver tumor is resolved. It's gone. It's been totally solving, and the last two PET scans showed that it's gone. But what's interesting is a year and a half later, she ends up with a pleural, you know, lung fluid, a pleural effusion, and some positive cells in the lung, but of course no nodules yet, no identifiable masses.
Mm-hmm.
But what I also just discovered is that she's a smoker. And so as you just mm-hmm. pointed out, metastatic
right.
disease often has very, very specific reasons of why it goes there. And so, of course, the toxicity in her lungs, the acidosis, the decreased circulation, the depression of the immune system certainly may be
that's where the cancer can live, you know, and reproduce. Yeah. Yeah, it's very fascinating.
So healing old trauma. I'm so glad you used that phrase, that's where the cancer can live, because I'm actually going to follow up with her by phone. She lives out of state, so we don't have the opportunity to meet much. But I'm going to use those exact words that you just mentioned. That's where the cancer can live.
That's right. That's right. So what I'm thinking is, and I'm just thinking out loud, because, you know, like I said, I really think there's something to this multidimensional thing with cancer. And when certain things exist, cancer can flourish. So trauma, even past traumas, areas need to be healed. So things like Rolfing or deep massage, you know, things that heal the physical body, healing techniques that can heal the etheric and the physical body, those might be very important. And then hormonal balance, I think, is important, because if hormones are out of whack, I really believe it's easier for these energies to move between dimensions, okay? And then, detoxification, things that are very, very toxic, acidosis, and, you know, with low energy, those are the areas where cancers live. And they just, you know, we know the metabolic reasons for that. I mean, we know that is a fact. And so these are the things that we can change and actually have an effect.
One thing about hormones, I got the idea that you were talking about their effect on the body, and I know you were in part, but the other thing mm-hmm. that's interesting is that hormones also affect our emotions, which, you know,
absolutely.
So we can have a much better attitude and an approach to life just with a more balanced, youthful level of hormones. And
right.
So I've seen quite a, and even, for example, in nutritionally, you and I both know that, you know, B12 deficiencies are really fairly common and a great source, a great reason for depression and insomnia and fatigue. So, you know,
and
just
stomach cancer.
Someone's, yes. Yes.
I mean, so, it actually results in a cancer, you know.
So optimizing hormone levels and nutritional levels, such as B12,
mm-hmm.
can very much improve someone's emotional well-being and their
right.
their resolve to fight cancer.
It's true. And I think Suzanne Summers, in her book on cancer, talks about the importance of hormone balancing. And I think that, I mean, more than ever, I think that that is something we need to look at, too. I mean, we don't always look at it with cancer patients, but I think it's important to do so.
Yes, and you mentioned detoxification. I wanted to remind our audience, I think two of the books that you and I have read and cherished and benefited from, one was what I mentioned earlier, Detoxify or Die by mm-hmm. Dr. Sherry Rogers. And then another one that you've probably discussed on the show is I think Toxic Emotions Never Die.
Mm-hmm.
There's another book called Toxic Emotions Buried, Never Die or something. So those are very important things to bring up with patients. And you can't escape trauma. It's got to be resolved. And sometimes it's the reason.
Right.
Why a patient will not respond and get better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I had a short discussion with Dr. Gonzalez. Of course, he treats pancreatic cancer. That's what he's known for. He treats all cancer, but he's well known for that because he has like 33-year survivors and stuff. I told him that in our experience, pancreatic cancer was when someone was like mad at God, really, really unhappy, often really bitter about us, especially a spouse's death. And he said that he found that that was true, that the toxic emotions in pancreatic cancer are so toxic. I mean, they're just really like hate, dark, black hate that they can't get. And it's usually hatred of something like God or something big. It's not just like not liking one person. It's really big. And I said, well, that's why I think that people go out so quickly with it, because of the intensity of that emotion. And,
that's a great point. And the pancreatic cancer patient that I told you about a few minutes ago, that was her mm-hmm. exact sort of sentiment or my description of her. She had intense hatred for her ex-husband.
So the more intense the emotion, the greater risk. It's really true. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we're getting close to the end of our hour. Rhett, would you like to give people your contact information and the location of your office?
I'll be glad to, and I want to thank you for having me on the show, and I appreciate your audience, and we'll always look forward to working with you and collaborating. And I am located in the north side of Atlanta in Roswell, Georgia. Our phone number is 678-990-5401, and our website called realhealthmedical.com.
Great, great. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We should have done this a long time ago. I was doing the radio show when you were here, but I never thought to interview you. That's kind of weird, isn't it? We should have done this interview a long time ago.
Well, it's been great, and I always look forward to working with you. I look forward to the next radio show. And
there you go.
I'll come visit very, very soon on a Thursday night.
Yeah, we've got a lot more to talk about, actually, because there's a lot more things you do up there that we can go into. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We've been talking with Dr. Rhett Bergeron, very interesting things about holistic cancer care and understanding cancer from much more than just a cellular level. Noetic Science in March will be Trish McKinnon. She will be here on the 21st at 7:30 at the Georgetown Dunwoody office. She's giving a lecture on galactic awakening and the birth of Homo Luminus. And then we have every Wednesday night the Abraham Hicks meetup group. Kent Boxberger is doing Law of Attraction. And then Dr. Gordon, and who's my partner in plastic surgery, and myself will be doing a free lecture on breast implants, What You Need to Know. And that's on the 26th of March, a Tuesday at 7:15 at the Dunwoody office as well. Next week, we have Dr. William Rea, who is actually a cardiovascular surgeon. He's retired now, but he is an expert on multiple chemical sensitivity and electromagnetic sensitivity, and we'll be talking with him on the 16th. And then we have Dr. Jennifer Howard, Your Ultimate Life Plan, on the 23rd. So thanks so much for joining us, and please join us next week. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show.